Hello and welcome to my podcast. My name is Avi Heller, and together we are studying the Masechet of Megillah. This series is a project of the Orthodox Union Synagogue Services Department, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We are at the very, very bottom of Daf Bet Amud Bet in Megillah. We are three lines up from the bottom in the middle of the page. What's happening now has nothing to do with Megillah, but we started talking about a statement of Rabbi Yirmiah, and some people said it was in the name of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. And so the Gemara is now going to mention a couple of other teachings of Rabbi Yirmiah and Rabbi Chiya bar Abba before it gets back on track. Okay, three lines up from the bottom. Va'amar Rabbi Yirmiah, v'itema Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. And Rabbi Yirmiah said, and some said in the name of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Menatzbach Sofim Amarum. Now, Menatzbach is not a real word, but it refers to the five letters in the Hebrew alphabet that have two forms. They have a regular form and then what we call a sofit form. So mem has a mem sofit, nun has a nun sofit, tzadi, tzadi sofit, pei, pei sofit, and kaf, kaf sofit. These are the five letters that can take two different forms when they're written. So what they're saying is that the dual forms of these letters was created or was articulated by the Tzofim. The Tzofim are the Nevi'im, some kind of Nevi'im. So the Nevi'im are the ones who articulated that these letters should have dual forms, whatever that means. So the Gemara asks, V'tizbara, does this make sense? V'hakativ, isn't it written? This is a question. That hey is always the question. V'hakativ, isn't it written in the Torah? Ela ha-mitzvot. When it says, these are the mitzvot, and the teaching of Elah mitzvot is, these are the mitzvot, and you can't make new mitzvot. She'ein navi rashai, no prophet is permitted, rashai means permitted, no prophet is permitted, l'chadesh davar me'ata, to make a new Torah commandment. So somehow they think that this violates the idea of creating something new, that they change the letters of the Torah, that sometimes they have one form and sometimes they have another form. Ve'od, and moreover, I'll ask the question on that from another angle. Ha'amar Rav Chista, again that's a Heh Sheila. Ha'amar Rav Chista, didn't Rav Chista say, Mem v'samach shebeluchot, now we're at the very top of Daf Gimel, b'neis hayu omdin, this is a famous teaching, that in the luchot that Moshe brought down from Har Sinai, that the letters were engraved all the way through the stone, that you could see all the way through, and there were a number of miracles associated with this. One is that you could read it from either side, even though it should have been forward and backwards, like it should have been in reverse from the backside, but you could read it from either side. And in addition, there were two letters, the Mem and the Samech, that Banes Hayuomdin, they stood miraculously because they have a donut hole. So a Samech, which is a circle, goes all the way around, and the donut hole in the middle should fall out unless it was hovering there miraculously. And lastly, of course, the Mem, also, but an ordinary mem does not have, is not usually written with a donut hole. The way we write a mem anyway is it has, there's some connection there. You could still do it in a paper cut. But a mem sofit, a final mem, definitely is a full square, and you would have not a round donut hole, but a square donut hole in the middle of that mem. So what they're arguing is that we have already from the time of Moshe a final mem. How could you say that it was the Nevi'im that came up with the final versions of the letters, or that had two versions of the letters, a regular mem and a final mem, when it seems like we had it already from the time of Moshe? So two questions on this very cryptic teaching, which has a lot of other questions associated with it, that the prophets were the ones who instituted or came up with the final forms of the letters. So the Gemara says, I'm on the fourth word at the top of Daf Gimel. In, okay, yes, Mehava Havu, they did have both versions of the letters, a regular form and the final form. Velo Havu Yadi He Be'emtza Teva, Ve He Be'Sof Teva. Velo Havu Yadi, they didn't know which one was in the emtza teva, which one was in the middle of the word, and which one was in the end of the word. In other words, they didn't know which form was where. Like, where do you put the regular mem and where do you put the final mem? I mean, we call it the final mem, but they weren't sure which version of the letter went where. The atut sofim, and then the prophets came, the takinu, and they set it up. Petuchin be'emtza, the open ones are in the middle of the word. Ustumin besof teva, and the closed ones are in the end of the word. This is hard to explain also, just because already the Torah is written in this way. And also, not all of the letters are more open or closed in their final, are more closed in their final forms. Only the mem is. The mem is a closed form, but let's say a chaf and a nun are not more closed in their final forms than their middle forms. So there are a lot of questions to ask about this. But what the Gemara wants to say here is they didn't really institute the forms. They just arranged them. So they didn't really, you know, make anything new. They just sorted it out a little better. Sof, says the Gemara, at the end of the day, Ela ha-mitzvot, these are the mitzvot, as we said before, she'ein navi atid l'chadesh davar me'ata. They're still not allowed to do something new. How could they determine which letters went where? I think they think it's still a problem. Ela, so the Gemara concedes and says, fine, you're correct. They were not able to come up even with arranging which letters went where. Rather, shikachum v'chazru v'yasdum. What happened is that there was originally a tradition about which letters went where, but then they forgot it. Shchachum, they forgot it. They lost the tradition. And what the prophets did is they came and they restored the tradition. So therefore, they didn't actually come up with anything new at all. They just restored the crown to its former glory. So that's how we solve the problem. It seems that we're quite troubled with the idea that anyone would change or alter the text of the Torah in any way after it was originally set. Okay, so that is that mini sugya. That's one teaching of Rabbi Yirmiyah. Here's another one. We are now 2, 4, 6 lines down from the top. The Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, and said Rabbi Yirmiyah, the Itema Rabbi Chiya Bar Abi, and some said in the name of Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Targum Shel Torah, the translation of the Torah. This is the translation of the Torah into Aramaic. And for instance, when we do Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum, you're supposed to learn the Parsha every week. You read it twice in the Hebrew and once in the Targum. Targum always means the Aramaic translation. And here the Torah identifies the author of that Aramaic translation, which we all know because we call it that. Unculus Hager was Unculus, who was a Roman convert to Judaism, and he's the one that wrote this Aramaic translation. And he said it, Amru, he said it, Mipi Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yeshua. He had teachers, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, and he based his Aramaic translation and the interpretation of the Torah that he chose based on his learning from his two teachers. Okay. Targum Shel Nevi'im, now the Aramaic translation of the prophets, was done by Yonatan ben Uziel. He did it, Amru Mipi Chagai Zechariah Umalachi. He learned the proper translation of the prophetic books from his teachers, who were the prophets, Chagai Zechariah and Malachi. Each of those prophets actually has their own books among the 12 minor prophets, the Treyasar. Okay, so we've identified that Unculus translated the Torah into Aramaic and that Yonatan ben Uziel translated the prophets into Aramaic. Now, the Gemara says that when Yonatan ben Uziel translated the prophets into Aramaic, v'nizdazea Eretz Yisrael arbameo parsa al arbameo parsa, the land of Israel trembled 400 parsas by 400 parsas. This is a sort of colorful way. It sounds like an earthquake, but it's a colorful way of saying that something really, really terrible and earth-shattering has happened. Yatzda batkol, a heavenly voice came out of the heavens, the Amra, and it said, and sounds like in a very accusing and angry way, Mi hu zeh? It's like Achashverosh confronting Haman, right? Who is the one, Lavdil, Shegila sitrai libnei adam, who has revealed my secrets to human beings? Because here he took all the secrets of the Nevi'im, of the books of the Nevi'im, which you could only understand if you could read the Hebrew and had a teacher and turn them into Aramaic so that anybody could read them. So it sounds like Hashem was upset that you know, there was cliff notes for the Nevi'im. Amad Yonatan ben Uziel al Raglav. Yonatan ben Uziel did not take this lying down. He stood up on his feet defiantly, and he shouted back at the bat call, the Amar, and he said, Anihu shegiliti starecha libnei adam. I am the one who revealed your secrets to human beings. And then he makes a beautiful speech. Galui viadua lefanecha. It is obvious and known before you, Hashem, shelo lichvodi asiti, that I did not do this in order to burnish my own honor, that I'm such a great translator or such a great scribe, velo lichvod beit abba, and not for the honor of my family and my house, ela lichvodcha asiti, I did this for your honor, Hashem, shelo yirbu machloket b'Yisrael, so that there would not be so much division, discord, and argument among the Jewish people, because apparently no one could properly understand the scriptures. They were arguing about what the proper meaning of the psukim was, and it was causing a machloket. So he wrote this commentary that revealed the proper interpretation of the psukim so that there would be less arguing about how to translate the Navi. Va'od bikesh legalot targum shel ketuvim. So then Yonatan ben Uziel was going to go on and do an Aramaic translation of the last part of Tanakh, the ketuvim, the writings. Yatzta bat kol, but the heavenly voice came back, the Amralo, and said, Dayecha, that's enough. Okay, you did the Nevi'im, you made your case, I agree, or I'll let it go, but no way I'm letting you do the ketuvim too. My taima, what is the reason? That abbreviation, memtet, what is the reason? My taima. Mishum de'it be'ketz mashiach. Because in the ketuvim, if you know how to read it correctly, is the answer to when Mashiach will come. According to Rashi, he says that it's written in the book of Daniel, in this whole story of the four monsters, each one representing one of the exiles that the Jewish people will go through, and that if you properly interpret the book of Daniel, you can know when Mashiach would come, and he did not want that revealed. So Yonatan ben Uziel never did write a Aramaic translation of the Ketuvim. However, other authorities later did. We have the whole translation of the Ketuvim that exists. So now the Gemara asks, V'targum shel Torah unklus hager amaro? Is it true that Unklus the proselyte was the one who translated the Torah? V'ha amar Rav Ika bar Avin, but isn't it true that we have a teaching from Rav Ika, the son of Avin, Amar Rav Hananel, who said in the name of Rav Hananel, Amar Rav, who said in the name of Rav, he's going to say that this Aramaic translation existed before Unklus. My dichtiv, what is the way to understand this pasuk? This is pasuk from Nehemiah, and it says, Vayikar'u ba'sefer Torat Eloha Elohim, and they read, this is when they were coming back to rebuild the second Beit HaMikdash, they read in the book of the Torah of Hashem, Miforash, explained, Vesum Sechel, with wisdom, Viavinu ba'mikra, and they understood the reading, so what does that mean? That they understood it and that they explained it and gave it wisdom. So they explain it phrase by phrase. Vayikar'u b'sefer Torah te'elokim, they read in the book of the Torah of Hashem. Zemikra, that is the text of the Torah. Mifurash, what does it mean that it was explained? Zetargum, and this is the important part. That was the translation into Aramaic. So even at the time of Nehemiah, apparently they had the translation of the Torah. And how do you know that Unkelus did it? It was already done before him. But he goes on, Vesum Seichel, Elu Hapsukin, and the wisdom was how to break up the verses. As you know, in the Torah, there are no periods, so you have to know where the verses end. So that's what Vesum Seichel meant. V'avinu b'mikra, and they understood the reading. Elu Piskei Te'amim, these are the vocalized notes. Rashi points out, he calls them haneginot kruin tamim. These are what we call the tamim, which is the trup, how you sing or chant the Torah was also taught by Nehemiah, the original tune of how to sing the Torah. Now, we know in history that they did not have the actual notes. Like if you look in a Chumash, you see that all the Mapach, Pashta, all the musical notation didn't exist. That was invented later. But it could be that the tune or some similar tune existed and that it was taught as an oral tradition. V'amrila Eloha Misored. And some people say this was the tradition. So the Gemara answers, okay, it's true that there was some kind of an Aramaic translation before Onkelos, but Shachachum, they forgot the Aramaic translation, the Chazru V'yastum, and he returned and redid it. So it sounds like he redid it in exactly the way it was done before. That's hard to know, but I guess since it was an authoritative translation, it replaced the one that was forgotten. So maybe Onkelos wasn't the first to ever translate the Torah, but his is the one that we have in the second stage. So now the Gemara asks a different question. Maishna d'oraita, what's the difference between the Torah? In Aramaic, the word d'oraita means the Torah. In fact, orei, which is teaching, is similar to the word Torah. It's just slightly changed in the Aramaic. So maishna d'oraita, why is it different that in the Torah, d'lo izdazea, that the earth did not shake and tremble, but for the prophets it did? Meaning you would think that when they revealed the translation of the Torah, the earth would shake more than for the prophets, because the Torah is on a higher level of sanctity. So Gemara explains, Doraita, the Torah, Mifrasha Milta. The Torah is more easily explainable. It's, you know, while it may be holier, it's not as complicated to interpret. In the prophets, there are some things that are easily decipherable, and there are some things that are very opaque and very hard to understand. And now the Gemara is going to give a very bizarre example of something that is difficult to understand in the prophets and the writings. I'm going to quote a pasuk from Zechariah. This pasuk of Zechariah is talking about the end of days. And it says, by Yom Hahu, on that day, Yigdal HaMispeid B'Yerushalayim. There will be a tremendous a funeral in Jerusalem, and they will give a eulogy. There will be a huge eulogy in Jerusalem. K'mispeid Hadad Rimon B'Pikat Megiddon. Like the Hespeid of Hadad Rimon, which is an Aramaic name, a king of Aram, in the valley of Megiddon. Now the problem is that this pasuk doesn't make any sense to us. We don't know what it means because we don't know anything about the eulogy of Hadad Rimon, as certainly not related to the valley of Megiddon and not related to Yerushalayim. So we don't know what it's talking about here and why it would refer to it. So V'amar Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef says, and Rav Yosef was an expert in the Targumim. It was his one of his areas of special study. Ilmale tirguma, without the translation of this verse, the haikrav, this verse, lo yadana mai kamar, we would not know what it is talking about. Now he's going to quote the Aramaic translation. Now there's two different kinds of Aramaic translations. Onkelos is a very literal translator. He rarely strays off script. He basically translates very cleanly and sparely the text of the Torah. However, some of the translations in the Nevi'im, those that we call Yonatan ben Uziel or the Targum Yerushalmi, are often much more expansive, and they put in all sorts of additional information and clauses and stories that are not direct translations, and this is one of those. So here's what the translation says. Bioma hahu, on that day, Yazgei mispeda, there was a huge eulogy, just as it says in the verse, Birushalayim. Kimispeda, now here it's going to change it, like the eulogy of Achav bar Omri, like the eulogy of Achav, the son of Omri, who was a king of Israel who was killed, the Katal Yate Hadad Rimon ben Tavrimon ben Ramot Gilad, who was killed by Hadad Rimon, the son of Tavrimon, in Ramot Gilad. Now this story is found in the first book of Malachim, and it doesn't say that Hadad Rimon killed him. It says that an Aramaean soldier killed him, but it could be that this is who it was. Uchemispeda, and like the eulogy of Yoshiyahu bar Amon, who was also a king, but he was a righteous king. Achav was a wicked king who, according to the rabbis, did only one mitzvah in his whole life, one good thing in his whole life. Yoshiyahu was a very righteous king. The Katal Yate Paro Chagira, the lame pharaoh, the ruler of Egypt, killed him, but begat Megiddo in the valley of Megiddo. So really, there's no eulogy of Hadad Rimmon in the Valley of Megiddon, but it's referring to two separate incidences, one about Ahav and one about Yoshiyahu. And we would never have understood what the meaning of this verse was if the unless the Targum had come and explained it to us. Now, I think we still don't understand the meaning of this verse. Why on earth is it comparing this end of days to the eulogy of Ahav and the eulogy of Yoshiyahu? Why a wicked king and a righteous king? There are many, many questions to deal with here, but let's at least leave it with the understanding that we can learn a lot about the Torah and the Nevi'im from looking at the Aramaic translations, and there are some Rabbanim and some Talmidei Chachamim who felt that it was really important to learn these Targumim in order to properly understand the Torah. Okay, now we're moving on a little bit more. We are moving back into a story of Daniel. As we mentioned above, that there was the possibility that the date of the coming of the Mashiach is revealed in the book of Daniel. So here we have a pasuk from Daniel. V'ra'iti ani Daniel levadi et hamar'ah. I Daniel myself saw the vision. V'ha'anashim asher hayu imi lo ra'u et hamar'ah. And the people that were with me, they did not see the vision. Aval, but charada gdola nafla alehem, a great trembling and fear fell upon them. Vayivruchu behechave, and they fled to hide. So they didn't see anything, but they felt something. Gemara asks, man ninhu anashim, who are these men that were with Daniel? Amar Rabbi Yirmiya of Item Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, another teaching of Rabbi Yirmiya, or some say Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, I think it's our fourth one. Zeh Chagai Zechariah u'Malachi. This was the prophets, as we mentioned above, and these were the prophets who taught Yonatan ben Uziel how to translate the Nevi'im. Chagai Zechariah and Malachi. Now here we have a problem. Chagai Zechariah and Malachi are in Nevi'im. Daniel is in Ketuvim. They are prophets. Why couldn't they see the vision that Daniel was able to see? So the Gemara says, well, it's a trade-off. Inhu adifi minei, they were better than him. Adif means better. Inhu, they were better than him. Ve'ihu, and he, adif minaihu, was better than them in some ways. Now I was going to explain. Inhu adife minei, they are better than him. De inhu nevi'e, because they are prophets. Chagai Zechariah and Malachi are prophets. Ve'ihu lav navi'i. Ve'ihu lav navi, and he is not a navi. Now this is not 100% clear. Clearly Daniel is a navi, but his book is not in the Nevi'im. So perhaps the way in which he was a navi, or the fact that he was never given a task to go prophesize to the Jewish people, makes him not the same kind of navi. Ihu adif minayhu, but he is better than they are. De'ihu chaza, because he saw the vision, and they did not merit to see the prophetic vision. So he was able to see what they were not able to see. So now the Gemara asks another question. If they didn't see the vision, which was a very scary vision, why did they get scared? Okay, I'm now on the second wide line. Af al gav de'inhu lo chazi, even though they didn't see the vision, mazalaihu chazi, their mazal saw it. Now, we don't know what this means. I wrote in my notes here, sixth sense, that they had a feeling of fear, like a paranormal sense. They didn't actually see what was happening, but they felt it in a sixth sense kind of way. Rashi writes that this is the sar shel kol adam lamala, that your mazal is like a shadow version of yourself that travels in heaven and represents you in heaven, which reminds us of when Yaakov and Esav were fighting, that it wasn't Yaakov and Esav. They say that the man that Yaakov fought with the night was Saro Shel Esav, was his mazel, not really him. I don't know what this means or how we can understand it or what kind of personality this person is, or if it's us and what our relationship is to our own mazel. But the idea here is that they had a sense through their mazel that something scary was happening even though they couldn't see it. And we'd have to go deeper into it to understand more than that. Just a couple more lines and then we'll finish. Amar Ravina said, Shmamina haiman demivet, This is a proof that anyone who suddenly gets scared for no reason, afogav de'ihu lo chazi, even though he didn't see anything, mazale chazi, his mazel must have seen something that scared him, and he's just getting the blowback. Maitakante, so if you get scared for no reason, which means your mazel is seeing something scary, what can you do to fix it? So he says, likre kriyashma. If you ever get really scared for no reason, read kriyashma. So I don't think this is necessarily normative halacha, but there are great rabbis who suggested this, that in a time of fear you should say kriyashma, and it's certainly not a bad thing to do. V'ikaim bimkomati nofed, if you're in a dirty place, so in a dirty place, the place that smells or that has, smelly things in it, you can't say kriyashma. Linshof miduchte arbagar mide, you should move 4 cubits from where you are, and then try to say the shma. V'ilo, and if you can't get away from the smell or the stench or the uncleanness, then you lema hachi, say this instead. Say to the demon who is close to you, which is why you're feeling scared, there are fatter sheep than me. Meaning, why are you wasting your time on little old me? Go over there and there's a fatter sheep for you to get. That's what we used to say we'd put on our door when people came to collect tzedakah. You know, we just put an arrow to go find the fatter sheep up there. Except then, of course, you lose the mitzvah. Okay, and now there's two dots. And we come to the end of the sugya of this thing that had nothing to do with Purim, but these were a number of statements. I think we saw 4 or 5 statements of Rabbi Yirmiyah dealing with different interesting topics. And when we come back for the second installment of Daf Gimel, we will be back to talking about Purim and Megillah. Have a wonderful day.